This is Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
Yes, Isabella Velicogna is a co-author on the new paper led by James Hansen. She's also a power researcher in her own right. Educated in Italy, Isabella has a collection of roles with NASA's Jet Propulsion Lab, the Ceres Institute at the University of Colorado, and she's an associate professor of Earth System Science at the University of California, Irvine, and that's where we've reached her. On Radio EcoShock, you have heard me talk about a pair of satellites called GRACE. These twins in space can measure changes of gravity in the land, in subsurface waters even, and ice at the poles. Isabella Velicogna can use that information to, as she says, study the mass balance of the Greenland and Antarctic ice sheets and glaciers worldwide in response to climate warming. That's just part of her expertise, including research on the high Arctic water cycle, projections of sea level rise due to climate change, and all this fits perfectly into the new publication that is rocking the science world. It's a long paper with a long title, and the title is Ice Melt, Sea Level Rise, and Superstorms, Evidence from Paleoclimate Data, Climate Modeling, and Modern Observations that 2 degrees C warming could be dangerous. Isabella Velicogna, welcome to Radio EcoShock. So what role did you play in this paper?
So as you said, I have done a lot of work looking at the data of the GRACE satellite. And so in the paper, what I did, I used this data set, this observation. They are very special because they can basically measure the change. We can use them to measure the change in mass of the ice sheets. And so see how much they are losing mass, or they are increasing mass, if that was the case. And I've been using this data to calculate the mass losses from the Antarctic and Greenland ice sheets since 2002, so for a little bit more than 10 years, about 13 years.
And do we know what the net volume of ice or water lost from the whole of Antarctica was, say, last year?
So when we look at the ice sheets, we don't really think exactly one year, because it's a little bit like when we look at climate, we don't think how it was, you know, last year. We look at an average, what's happening over an average in time. But yes, so what we know that if we look, for example, from the data that we use in the mass loss over the past 10 years or so, we can see that there is an average mass loss. On average, if I do the average between one year and another during this period, it's about 86 gigaton per year. That's a gigaton, just to have an idea, is how much water, for example, all LA County, which is a big city, uses in one year to basically do everything, you know, the population needs for agriculture, people showering, water the lawn, company to use. So it's a lot of water when we talk about 86 on average. But I think that more than looking, you know, how much ice is lost in 1 year, is more important to the things that I think we are very, I don't know if it excited is the war. Scientists get excited about discovering things that, you know, and especially when you study something and it change faster. It's pretty cool from a scientist point of view, is that this mass loss is not the same every year. You know, we find that it's increasing actually every year. So if we have an average of, you know, 86, for example, gigaton per year between, say, in 10 years, this is about the average mass that you have, you know, in the middle of this period. But really, if you look at the more recent year, every year, what we find that, for example, in Antarctica, based on this 14 years period that we have from GRACE, we get about 70 gigaton additional every year, which is quite a bit.
It is a lot, and I'm interested that it's increasing every year because so is the global temperature, as far as we can understand. Now, one thing that was described in the paper is a phenomenon of how cold meltwater seems to be forming a cap that is somehow driving warmer water deeper under the glaciers. Did I understand that correctly, and how does it work?
Well, you know, it's not very surprising, I guess, for scientists, because what's occurring in both polar regions. What happened in the polar region is that actually the cold water is on top and the warmer water is at the bottom. And this is, you know, it's like normally when you go in the tropic, usually you do have warmer water on the top and colder water on the bottom. But this is, you know, this is not the condition around the polar region closer to the ice. And for this reason, the warm water is, you can say, dangerously, you know, to add a little bit of suspense, closer to the glacier. What really pushes, drives the water, the warmer water, closer to the glacier is the wind pattern, how the wind are changing. So what happened is that the wind, what we are observing is that given how the water has, so we have the colder water on top and warmer water on the bottom, if the wind change, you know, the wind pattern can move the colder water and they allow the warmer water to get closer to the glacier. And that's not good because if you have warmer water at that, ice turns out, you know, you need a smaller change in the heat of the of your water to melt ice at depth because the pressure is higher.
For a long time, scientists focused on West Antarctica, saying East Antarctica was for now more or less immune to climate change. And then we heard maybe that isn't so. What is happening in East Antarctica?
So I think that people have been, and scientists have been more focused on West Antarctica because West Antarctica has a lower elevation and we have more observation of more dynamic change, faster change in some region. A lot of the glacier are, most of the West Antarctica is grounded below sea level, so it's basically is a marine grounded, so it's below sea level, so it's more easier to melt, you know, once it starts melting. And East Antarctica is much higher elevation, and there is now a big portion grounded below sea level. But what we are observing the, I guess people start to realize, and I think it's a while that we know, that. But on the other hand, if you look at East and West Antarctica, East Antarctica is much larger than West Antarctica. And so even if the, you know, proportionally to the entire East Antarctica, there are smaller portion, they are grounded below sea level, they can contribute a lot to the total sea level rise. For example, you know, when we think about West Antarctica, we talk about there's a sector that's been, people have been talking a lot about, there's the Amundsen Sea sector, and it's really losing mass very fast. And if it just really collapse, which, you know, it seems very dramatic, but, you know, collapse in the ice sheet timescale occur in a relative long time. But this sector, which is one of the larger sectors, the more unstable in West Antarctica, can contribute about 1 meter of sea level. And this is the combination of many glaciers. If we move to East Antarctica, there are some sectors which are grounded below sea level. It means that, you know, they are attached to the bedrock. The ice is attached to the bedrock, but is below the mean sea level, right? So those are very vulnerable. Once, you know, we have warmer water, they get closer to the glaciers. So only one of those glaciers, for example, where we are observing an increase in warm water getting closer to the glacier can contribute. This would be like Totem Glacier, which is in East Antarctica. Can just this one glacier alone would contribute, if it collapsed, about 3.9 meters, almost 4 meters of global sea level. So point being that although it's considered overall more stable, East Antarctica, it has some sector that can be very vulnerable to climate-induced changes. And we are observing, you know, that along those region, we are observing some, you know, warmer water getting closer to the glacier, and this tells us that we should watch out.
Moving ahead, in general, we've heard again and again that deglaciation has been underestimated, particularly by the IPCC. Isabella Velikonia, do you agree?
Yes, so I agree with this, and there is an underestimated when we look at those reports. And the reason why this is the case is that those assessments are based on deterministic model. So their model, they are as good as possible at the present, but there is a general understanding in the community that they are missing some key physical processing. And that doesn't mean that, you know, the scientists don't know what they're doing. It means that we are working toward improving those models, but because of the complexity of the ice sheet, because of the observation that we have in a lot of places, not enough. They, by comparing the projection that those model, the result from those model in terms of in terms of estimate of sea level rise from the ice sheets, they are underestimating what we are observing. And so if those model are used for making prediction, is intrinsically we know that they are going to underestimate what is the contribution of the glacier to sea level.
Where do you think this is all going, say, in our lifetimes, whatever that may mean, and say, by the end of the century? Are we going to see meaningful change at the poles, or is this something that's going to take 500 years, 1,000 years, or longer?
Well, I would say we are already seeing meaningful changes at the poles. It depends what we see with meaningful, but definitely the ice sheets are already showing us changes, you know, that we can see. I think that what we are expecting for the end of the century, I believe that very likely we're going to get more than 1 meter of sea level change. And when I say 1 meter, I talk about, in you know, generally overall 1 meter, but I think that is generally understood that the ice sheets are really going to control most of this sea level change. And so they are like the big player in the game. And so point being that I think we're going to get more than 1 meter based on what we see. You know, we know that we expect changes in the climate and in what we are observing from the ice. It could be, on the other hand, higher than more than 1 meter. And, you know, there can be as high as 2 meter in principle. And this is depend on how fast the ice sheet are going to change. And that's not, you know, we don't have a certain answer to that. What we know that things can happen way faster than from the past, from what we know from the past that we are observing now. But it's complicated to be able to make prediction and have a very certain timeline.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith with my guest Isabella Velicogna, an ice and sea level expert from the University of California, Irvine. Isabella, when it comes to polar ice loss, do you think we have reached the stage of unstoppable or irreversible?
I would say that for some regions of the ice sheets, we have. Not for all the region. And what that means, it means that we are locked in on some changes. So there are some changes in sea level, some increase in sea level that I think we are locked in and are going to happen based on those regions where we feel that, you know, we are reached the stage of unstoppable. But on the other hand, we don't know how fast we're going to get there. On the other hand, what it says also is that we don't want to get to the unstoppable, irreversible stage for the entire ice sheet. So we should really work hard to try to slow down the process and try to, you know, manage it as much as possible.
Let's get back to the influential paper you co-authored with James Hansen and a team of other scientists. One impression I got from Dr. Hansen's video abstract of the paper that he published on YouTube is that he finds science is failing to keep up with reality. For example, models don't appear to capture measured changes in the ocean. Isabella, do you think science is broken, or do we need to extend our vision of it?
Well, I don't know if I would say that science is failing to keep up with reality. I would say that, you know, science is a big word, but I would just agree that how the results from our scientific work are presented, maybe they are not highlighting all the uncertainty in what we estimated. And so I think that the value, you know, as I was saying before, you know, we have those estimates based on models, but the model has weaknesses, and we know that there are those weaknesses, and we know that, you know, those uncertainty, you know, are also difficult to quantify. And from observation, on the other hand, we know that things are happening way faster. So I guess the point is that I would not say the science is broken. I would say that maybe it would be scientists are not doing the best job in presenting what are the uncertainty, and the message that comes across is a message that seems contradictory, while it's not.
So how important do you think this new Hansen-led paper is compared to some of the other science so far this century? Is this a big one or just another paper?
So what I see is really the important message of this paper, and again, it's one paper. What it tells us is that 2 degree increase in temperature is not a safe spot. And we know that after Paris, you know, there's been an agreement, let's try to keep temperature to less than 1 degree, 1.5, and even 1.5, actually, from what we know, is not necessarily a safe limit. And I think that that's the big message that came across from the paper. And this is based on, in the paper Jim did, together with all the other authors, he did an incredible work in trying to put in together a lot of scientists and analyze different aspects of modeling, and trying to highlight the uncertainty associated with that, and looking at the observation and trying to highlight what is this are bringing up as a difference. And I think the big message out of the paper is that mostly because of the megastorm that could occur, the sea level rise, 2 degrees is really an unsafe an unsafe limit, you know, respect, increase in temporary respect to the pre-industrial area. And so we really don't want to just feel safe there. We have to just kind of be prepared and try to see what we can do in a positive way, not that necessarily in a dramatic way. You know, it's just things are going to happen. We are locked in changes. There's a lot of inertia in climate variability, in how the ice sheet responds to climate. So if we are locked in changes, you know, in what's going to happen for probably the next 100 years, probably more, we want to start to just make, you know, as much effort as we can to slow down the process.
You talk about in a positive way, but do you worry about the future?
I do. I think that we should, but I don't try to worry. I think that one of the main problems sometimes is people, I don't want people to say, oh my God, what's going to happen? I worry in the sense that, you know, I know that we are set from science, you know, when you said, oh, is the science broken? I think that from observation and science, we know that from the past, we know that the ice sheets, one of the big results of the Earth, I think, IPCC, was that we know that during the last interglacial maximum, when the temperature was about 1.5 to 2.5 degrees higher than what is now, which is where we are heading at the end of the century, the sea level was 5 to 9 meters higher than at present, and most of this sea level increase was due to was coming from the ice sheets. So my point is more like we should be worried, you know, a little bit worried, as things don't happen, you know, from today to tomorrow in climate. To some extent, we have some freedom to adapt and to try to mitigate those changes and get ready. So I am worried if we are not starting to understand that we have to act and do something to slow down and to just try to prevent bigger changes.
Is there anything that I've missed that you would like to leave with our listeners?
I think one thing that sometimes I'm not sure the listener have clear is that scientists don't really have an agenda when they look at those things. You know, we are having, if you want to try to understand how the Earth works and what are, you know, the processes that govern those changes and how they're changing under different forcing, under different climate scenarios. So I don't think that as scientists, we have a secret agenda, you know, for why we are saying what's happening, you know, what's going to happen. To some extent, you know, it's almost more fun for us to have this very complicated problem to solve and to understand. And the fact that we don't have a model that we can push the button and tell us what's going to happen. So we are trying, when we just communicate with the public or we just try to just say, oh, we have new funding, it's not necessarily because, you know, we wanted to create a panic or we want to just be spectacular or we have any other second mean. We're just trying to communicate, look, we are improving our understanding of what is happening, and what we are seeing tells us that we should really watch out and be careful. Maybe not necessarily for us, you know, me, you, or, but, you know, for the generation of my kids and on the kids of my kids. I think we have a responsibility for that and for our planet.
From the University of California, Irvine, we've been speaking with Isabella Vallecogna. She's an associate professor of Earth System Science who also works with NASA and the Ceres Institute in Colorado. As a polar ice melt and sea level specialist, Isabella is a co-author of the new paper on ice melt, sea level rise, and superstorms. Thank you so much for sharing your time with us.
Thank you to you.
I'm Alex Smith reporting for Radio EcoShock.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.